I'd like to teach you or begin learning a song tomorrow night at Vespers. A choir group is going to do it, and if you like it well enough today, you might want to come and practice and sing with the choir group tomorrow. It's a song about Africa, and it actually could apply to all of Africa. It could apply to the world and what's happening, but for me, it has significance for my time and life in Southern Africa and the struggle that we live through with the people that continues to go on. And so I think what I'll do is play it through. I mean, actually, Africans don't, as you, any of you who saw the film last night, don't need music necessarily to sing. It flows and it's beautiful. But what I'll do is, there's a chorus at the top. I'm sorry, it's a little bit, I don't know if it's hard for you to see there, but hopefully you'll pick it up.
Can you read it over there?
God bless Africa, guard her children, guide her leaders. God bless Africa and give her peace. And then you repeat that. And that's always the refrain or the chorus. And then there are three different verses. But I'll play through the chorus first. And then, something to you. It's in front of you, but I'd like to share it because I think it's important for what we're going to be talking about today. It's the Declaration of Children's Rights. All children have a right to a name, enough food to eat, a decent place to live. All children should be looked after when they are sick and have a right to grow up with love, affection, and security. Handicapped children have a right to special treatment and education. All children have a right to free education and should be protected from neglect, cruelty, and exploitation. All children should not be made to work before a certain age and should be protected from discrimination. All children should never have to fear arrest and detention and should be brought up to understand that their energy and talents should be devoted to the service of their brothers and sisters. This is the Declaration of Children's Rights. I read that because I think that the children are the ones that are suffering the most in the world, but I speak for the children of South Africa in their in the life that they are living at this point in time, the fact that they live a full life before they even become 15 years of age. They have experienced so much that I feel that this is an important thing to think about when thinking about the children of the world. I wondered if there were any people, I know not everybody was here last night, but before we begin into this next session, were there any of you here last night to watch the video, Voices of Serafina, who would like to respond to anything at this point? Someone said they had wished that we could do that last night, but it was a bit late, and so I thought maybe if anybody had response or reaction to it, Maybe now would be a good time to say it.
The death rate of the children was just unbelievable, you know, in stillbirths.
Mm.
And even after birth, many of them had 5, 6 children, and they'd have one left.
Mm. Yeah, it's true.
I was amazed at the performance. I don't know if you think, you know, Zulu tribes, you think of them as being really uneducated. And now, were these done by actors? And
these were all young people who had never acted before.
Yeah,
they were taken
into.
That's
what I got from the story.
The director.
And they were tremendous.
Yeah.
Just
the director
tremendous.
Worked with them and lived with them in his home. He took them all in. There were 30-some children, young people, living in his home with him, so that they learned to
and
be a family.
A five-room house.
Yeah, to work together as a family. And then they put on the production, eventually,
here
of the story.
Hear about community again.
That's true.
I'm just hearing about community every place.
My question is, did they put it on one place in Johannesburg before they left, or would that be allowed?
They put that the one place that many controversial productions are allowed. That's why they were said something. I don't know if you picked that up about drama is the one way that they can say what they're feeling and act on the stage. And there was one theater in Johannesburg, the Market Theater, that was known for its controversial productions. And so this group did that production there for months. It may have run a year or so before they even left the country to come over to New York.
They would let them out.
It's amazing. It's amazing what is allowed and what is not allowed. What is allowed one time and another time is not allowed. It's one never knows. The same way with getting visas or getting into the country. Somebody may apply for it, they don't get it. The next person they do. So it's very unpredictable as to how things work there. Any other comments on the video last night, or otherwise we'll go on, and maybe things will come up and that we can talk about. The education crisis in South Africa came about by design rather than by chance. And the white government designed a distinct system for blacks known as Bantu education. And it was to be distinct from what the education was for whites. Now, it was segregated and funding was unequal. There's 5 to 7 times more money spent on the education of white children in South Africa than on black children. The other interesting thing is that there are separate departments of education for each race. There's a department of education for the whites, for the blacks, for the coloreds, for the Indians. Now that gets to be very expensive, and that's part of the problem of apartheid being just a very expensive thing for the government to handle. It was also that black education was entrusted to the control of appointed white government officials, and they were accountable to the white education ministers. So everything is controlled by the whites as far as the education goes for the different races. They declared that blacks must be given sufficient education to enable them to follow oral and written instructions. Now, the object was to train them and to teach the blacks to be servants of their white masters. So if you teach them to follow oral and written instructions, that's all they needed to know, and that's all we're expected to know. And so the result is that the fate was mostly manual labor. A lot of the people then ended up doing manual labor. In schools, the blacks were to be taught from childhood that equality with Europeans is not for them. So that's how, even that young person that spoke last night in the video talked about all he ever remembered, all he thought about was that he wasn't any good. He wanted to be white because the whites were good. So all through school, that's what he grew up feeling like. And with the people around him, wherever he came in, if he came in contact with them, that's what he was made to feel. People, the young people talked in there last night about going into shops. And if they would go into a shop, the white owner would, you know, kind of follow them around wherever they went. So they were always left with the feeling of being inferior. It comes out in little ways, and yet it's very has a great impact on the people, on the young people. It is in this light that many believe that Bantu education, which they called it, Bantu education, can't be reformed. It's just got to be gotten rid of. You need to get rid of it and start all over. Well, it's debatable as to whether the education is good, if they're better off with it or without it, with the education that's been given to the young people. But I've got some examples of things that have happened that I think speak for the system or what's happening within the system of education in South Africa. Graduates of the system, when they finally reach matric, they call it matriculation, many are ill prepared for their careers. You see, when young people go through school, they go through all the years, all the way through high school. But when they get to high school, at the very end, their last year, in order to graduate or to matriculate, they have to take another whole set of exams. And if they pass those exams, then they can graduate. If they don't, then they have to redo things and they don't finish their graduation. It's not like here where you accumulate grades. You know how you go through school and you accumulate grades and they all work together for a final grade. And it's your final exams that play into it, but they aren't your final grade or your final reason for passing. But there, they have to take a whole separate test after the end of their senior year in high school to be able to graduate. Now, with all the disruption in the education in the black system, and with the poor training for teachers, the poor education, when young black students get to the age of being seniors in high school, they haven't had near the education, but have to take the same exams as the white children in order to matriculate. And so it becomes a very difficult situation. You also have to pass certain exams if you want to go on to college. You have to take certain ones, and if you don't pass those, then you cannot go. You don't have the mark to go on to take to go on to university or college.
Is that in Afrikaans?
Afrikaans?
Oh.
Okay. That's within all the schools. Yeah, in Afrikaans.
So
speaking
that's
schools,
not what they speak when they leave the school.
There are different mediums of teaching. There are some schools you can go to that are Afrikaans teaching. Everything is taught in Afrikaans, but they offer English, an English class. The school the girls went to was an English-speaking school, but they did have to take Afrikaans class. So they had the language in one class, or one session, or whatever you want to call that. So another problem is that in the black schools they're grossly indoctrinated to despise their communities and to venerate European culture. The other thing is there's a massive dropout rate, and it's not related to the ability of the students. There are students who are very capable of learning and want to learn, but there are so many things that are happening that disrupt the system and to keep them from learning at school. And I'd like to just show you a short clip from a video that was on some years ago. Walter Cronkite did a whole study on children of apartheid and the effects it has on them. And they questioned a young man, and I'm going to show you that part to you and some other young children just to get a feel for what children have to put up with, why they can't be in school. If they're politically active, intelligent young people who want to change the system, want to get better education, as soon as they speak out against that, then the police are after them to quiet them. And so then it causes disruption with their studies. They have to hide. We had young people that would come and stay with us who studied in the city because they had been politically active. If they went back in their communities, they would be arrested, put away, and they still wanted to study. Or we had people who were just needed a safe place. But this one young man that I became very good friends with because I worked in an office with the detainee's office, and he was also very interested in his education, but he was also politically active. And he was interviewed by Walter Cronkite about his activities. He was a peaceful young person, working peacefully, and a very gentle-spoken young man. But he said things like this: "I just saw all my people, the masses, suffering under an unjust regime. I am fighting not only for my rights, but for the rights of all the others, for my parents who are not respected as people." He also said, "We are unhappy because of black education and the exploitation of black workers, and they must pay for school fees, textbooks, and examination fees. We were unable to pay for books. I did not have a dictionary. We demand better education, better school facilities, compulsory education for all." He said, "I'm not going to retreat. I'm going to go for it, to fight for my people and fight for my rights, for a democratic South Africa. I may die to achieve this idea. I'm not going to stop or retreat, but forward I shall search." And he did. And he spoke out on this program, and not too long after that, he had been detained before this also and spoke of his torture, but he was also detained again, picked up by the police, released, and not long after that he was found in a field outside his home, shot and killed. And as a result of speaking out, and so a young man who had so much to offer the world and to his country was done away with, and it was found that the police had done it, basically because he had spoken about his torture in his life. So I want to just, there are two little sections in here. I'd like you to just, if it's not too difficult, to just turn your chair around. I'm looking at it, it's ready to go.
Since the imposition of the state of emergency in mid-1986, thousands of young South Africans have been arrested and detained without trial. No one's sure of the exact number, since the government rarely provides such data. Independent monitoring groups, however, estimate that of the 25 to 30,000 persons believed so far detained, up to a third of them, 10,000 or so, have been 18 years of age or under. In September, the Minister for Law and Order said his government was holding, quote, only 115 children, unquote. He also labeled as wild continuing reports of children being beaten, given electric shocks, and subjected to other abuses while in police detention. Meanwhile, the government continues to prohibit public debate of the detained children issue, even down to the banning of T-shirts advocating their release. Until a few hours ago, these four teenagers were among the many thousands of students attending school in the black township of Soweto. Now, however, the four 17-year-olds are playing hooky on the back streets of Johannesburg, skipping the balance of their classes. But what sounds like a routine case of teenage truancy is in reality a very desperate and dangerous game of hide and seek. A game the four youngsters are having to play with armed security police who came to their school to arrest them.
And today I was chased by the small arm of the enemy, that is the soldiers within my school. They were surrounding my school. So I tried to, managed to escape. That's why I decided to come to town.
But why were they looking for you at school?
I think for my political activities.
Now in hiding and on the run, Godfrey's so-called political activities, which he says amount to little more than making speeches and protesting, have gotten him arrested and detained four times. The 17-year-old also claims to have been tortured. The police evidently do not think of Godfrey as being just another playground dissident.
They visit me each and every day, almost twice a week. Yeah, and I've been surveilled so they can see where I'm going and do all that stuff.
They must consider you dangerous then, I guess.
I think so.
Do you think you're dangerous?
I'm not dangerous.
You're not dangerous?
Yeah, I mean, I'm dangerous to them, but to the community, I'm not.
The government believes otherwise. In fact, last year it accused the 17-year-old of taking part in the necklacing death of a teacher, an allegation Godfrey denies. Necklacing is a means of execution in which a gasoline-filled tire is placed around a victim's neck and set on fire. Occasionally, township teenagers will use necklacing as a punishment for those they accuse or suspect of having cooperated with the authorities.
What do you think of the business of necklacing?
Well, I can comment on it because, I mean, it can be tried to look at the Russian Revolution or French Revolution. Within those times, I mean, they used to have guillotine as their revolutionary justice. So we don't have that kind of thing here in South Africa. So other people, those who are qualified, and they're using necklaces as their revolutionary justice.
But you don't approve of it?
Yes, I don't.
Not long ago, security police evidently thought this young boy was dangerous, a threat to his community. It was 1 a.m. when armed police came for 11-year-old Stanley. Also taken from their beds that night along with Stanley were four of his playmates. Shadrach, then 12, Nelson, 12, Petrus, also 12, and Hendrik, 13. Stanley had just celebrated his 10th birthday.
Did they have guns?
Yes, they hit us with the guns.
They hit you with guns?
Yes.
Before they took you in or when they
yes.
took you? Before you took you in?
Yes.
Did they say why they were hitting you?
We have to ask them, why are you hitting for? They're saying you must shut up.
Said you must shut up?
Yes.
Were these black policemen or white policemen?
Black
and white.
Yes.
The five small boys were kept in detention for 1 month and 5 days. They said they were denied legal help. They were never charged with a crime or stood trial. They were, however, the boys said, often frightened and intimidated.
They have to say we must talk to you because we're going to stay 25 years in prison.
They told you we're going to stay 25 years?
Yes.
So what did you think about that? How, what did you think you were going to do?
I was crying. They said we're going to cry.
You were crying?
Yes. They said we're going to live in the jail like Mandela.
Like Nelson Mandela, huh?
Yes. That's sentence. Life sentence. We're going to stay like they said that thing is a false, it's not a truth. They are hitters. They said to us, talk truth. Jelaka force, talk truth.
The so-called truth the police reportedly tried to get from the boys was in fact information. Information about some neighborhood teenagers who might have firebombed a policeman's home. Information the boys said they never had.
I show that to you just to give you a feel for what the children are living with disruption, with and it affects their whole way of looking at the education, whether they want it or not. It's almost impossible for them to continue to study and to live normally. The way one needs to do. I mean, you know how it is for you just to carry on your studies and to get things done. And if you have all those disruptions all the time, it makes it very difficult. So that's what happens. Conditions in the schools are below, you know, way below. Primitive. Pupils have to squat, some of them, for a lot of the day and write on their laps because there aren't enough facilities or supplies for the young people in the black education schools. The schools are windows broken from disruption and rioting and the police being around there. When the police are present, it stirs things up. It just happens. It's there's little agitation, and when you've got a lot of people together, it happens.
It's unthinkable to think of a 10-year-old as being political.
Well, they're children, and yet, as we say, they've experienced so much.
That's right. And in Serafina last night too, they emphasized that.
Yeah.
And Serafina being taken out of school and being beat, and they smile all the time because there's no time to weep.
That's true. And so many of them have to travel distances. So many of the young black students have to travel distances to school, especially in the rural areas, and that's where you have the greatest amount of hunger and malnutrition. And so it adds to, how can one come all the way, walk all the way to school for miles and miles, and then, but not be fed very well, and then to arrive there and then have to study and learn, and the conditions aren't very good for them, so it doesn't add to conducive learning. Corporal punishment is in the schools, and so if someone misbehaves, there's nothing that keeps a teacher from jacking the children or hitting them in any way. Classrooms are crowded. Sometimes you have several lessons going on in the same classroom. So you know how would that be for us to be working in this end and another group teaching on the other end. It's hard enough for us, for children. Imagine what that situation is like. Teachers are overworked and underqualified, and for the most part, they live under the fear of their superiors. The teachers that are in the schools, black teachers, know that they are being watched, know that what they're teaching gets out or gets back, so they are constantly living under fear of what they teach to the children. So that also is not an easy thing. And it's only natural that leaders in the country, with given all of these situations, have been critical. And Malefic Tsele, who some of you may have heard about, and who was at Holden this summer, was one of the pastors, a Lutheran pastor, who saw the need for the education, the need for improving education. And he served on the National Education Crisis Committee with other peoples and with people in Soweto. And his speaking out and working for that ended up getting him thrown in prison, and was there for 2 years, never being charged. And it's the writing of letters from the people in the United States who ended up getting him out, I think, that brought about the result. So leaders and parents and students are beginning and are protesting. I mean, it started in Lutheran Church in Southern Africa. His name is Frank Muller, and he is at the moment serving a black township and is able to live in the township. That's the first time, I think, that he tried other places and couldn't, but he's living right in the black township, and his wife is teaching in the black schools there. And he said schooling continues to be in crisis. Even teachers have found, they have formed unions now and are going on strike. And school, the teachers are demanding that the principal involve them in the making of decisions. Gone are the days when the teachers merely obey orders. The general uncertainty and growing political intolerance between organizations has also disrupted schooling. And this is a difficult time in our history. And another pastor wrote from another township on the other side of Johannesburg, saying that we have been having a very difficult time since the beginning of the year. And the children in the school, they've hardly had school, with the children making all sorts of demands, and they refuse to go to school until certain demands are met. They like to have decent places to study, and they would like to have conditions and good educational materials. And so the days are there now where people are not standing for the poor education, but it causes disruption and causes trouble. I think I'd like to just share something from another. Oh, I'm gonna put this here. talking about conditions in another area to become a viable, livable area, massive upgrading. This is talking about an area, and it's very common for a lot of the school areas. To become a viable, livable area, massive upgrading of the infrastructure, housing, and facilities are necessary. Urgent attention needs to be paid to the health needs of the community. The open drains, which clearly constitute a health hazard, they require immediate attention. But the primary school in this place is a disgrace. It is an insult to any teacher to expect him or her to have to teach it at that kind of a school. The dissatisfaction of the young people is clearly a legacy of their schooling and the circumstances in which their families have lived for generations. The non-availability of education opportunities for black students beyond Standard 8 in this particular area is disgraceful. So all of these things, you know, point to the fact that education is really in crisis, but people are not leaders. Are not standing for it, and they're speaking out, but still nothing has happened. And as long as apartheid is there, and you've got all these divisions, all the different, each race group has their own people in charge, or own division, and not very much money being spent on the black, then there's not going to be improvement. I just wanted to ask, Sarah, our children attended white government schools, and I don't know if Sarah, can you speak to how you found that a total different, in some ways totally different, but there were some things that were similar as far as discipline and whatever. Can you just share a little bit what it was like to go to school in a white government school, or how you felt in relationship to a lot of the people that you came in contact with there too, and their awareness of what was going on in the country?
Well, going to school in a government school, the kids I went to school with were, a lot of them came from Afrikaans backgrounds, and so they did go to an English school to learn English better, but a lot had Afrikaans parents. And so in school, you're not supposed to talk about anything political. It's all supposed to be confined to your own homes, and you're just not supposed to talk about it. Teachers aren't allowed to talk about anything political. And if, by chance, something did come up that was political and you started talking about it, like in history class or something, it usually would turn out to be me and maybe the teacher talking or discussing with the rest of the class. Like, I wouldn't say they were against me or anything because they were my classmates, but basically I would have a different opinion than everyone else in the class because they said that I was from America and I saw all this stuff in America and it wasn't really true. Whereas I saw a lot more that they didn't see because it's so government controlled there. And so my opinions were more educated, I would say, because I could speak on behalf of black people that I knew or black people that I heard from my parents. And they didn't know such things, and so they said it was untrue and that all Americans think that way. So the education that you get there in the white schools is very, there's a lot of memorization. You weren't taught to think creatively and your own opinions. You were just taught to memorize the work the teachers were giving you and to take an exam or a test on it and write back exactly how the teachers taught. You weren't supposed to analyze or put your own thoughts into it and make up your own opinions.
They did use corporal punishment too, didn't they?
Oh yeah. If you ever did something that the teacher didn't approve of or something. Well, when I was in primary school, you're not allowed to like cane the girls, like, you know, or jack them or like that, but you're allowed, the teachers would take rulers and you'd have to hold out your hands and they'd hit you on your hands, you know, with the ruler or something. That was for the girls. And the guys, if, well, any teacher could do that to a girl, but the guys were supposed to, it was supposed to be looked, the headmaster, the principal was supposed to be there. The problem was supposed to be taken to the principal, and the principal was supposed to cane the guys, or the teacher could cane them with the principal being there. But a lot of the time it didn't happen. The teacher would just take their cane and take the guy into the back room of the classroom or something and just, you know, hit them a couple times there without the principal ever being there. And it wasn't like the kids would not, most of the kids wouldn't stand up against this or anything, because it was just something that always happened. So they just took it as part of their life, you know, just everyday thing.
And the young men in the white schools were required to be on the cadets. It was like cadets, and then they practiced. It was sort of every Friday they had to come in. The South African Defense Force provided the uniform type things, which they wore then on Fridays, and they did their marching. And so in the Afrikaans schools, they taught, had target practice. So it was sort of preparing them. The young people were taken away during the year. Certain age groups, they were taken away to what they called Felt School, and it was a place where they would. Sarah attended one of those, but a lot of it was propaganda type things, taking them off into the fields to teach them how to survive. And it was a preparation for sort of the military, what they thought was important for the white students to be prepared. They always were afraid that there was going to be this revolution, and they had to be prepared, and the young people had to be prepared. So that sort of instills in young people to fear, and it distances the whites from the blacks in that way in the schools. And there's not this coming together to get to know each other, to know that we're all alike. And so I believe that the greatest problem is fear. I mean, there's a fear of the unknown and keeping people apart. I'd like to take time for questions, if any of you have some questions, and then I do have something, a quote I'd like to end with that Malefi Tsele had to say. Do anybody else have questions?
Some of what you're saying, unfortunately, is true in this country. You get out to the better Eastern schools, and the black children coming into those schools for college and university must come in the summertime, and they must proficiency out in chemistry and math if they're not there in September. Mm-hmm. My daughter has taught that 3 years at Carnegie Mellon in Pittsburgh.
And what do you see? I mean, how do you see that as a result of?
It's a result of the way the politicians divvy up the money for school systems. Mm-hmm. That's why the Chicago school system is having such an uproar. Mm-hmm. The schools on the fringes got all the money, and the schools in the inner city never get anything fixed. Mm-hmm. And now the superintendent does not control the school system. Each school is controlled by a group of 6 or 8 people. They judge the teachers, and teacher doesn't teach, she's out. I don't know what that's going to prove.
Yeah.
Except they're going to do it. But they have, Carnegie Mellon has said that there is a big discrepancy between the high schools that the black children, the education they're getting, and what the white children. Now, after that year of proficiency, and you said that time and time again, they go into the freshman college on the same level as the white students. They get the pick of the crop. But haven't I heard or haven't I read, isn't somebody comparing what's going on in South Africa with what the Germans tried to pull off in Germany?
That's exactly right.
Yeah, they just
you get that feeling.
Every so
also.
Often that line slips in the paper.
That's right.
We've got the Nazis are down in South Africa now, right. Not back in Germany.
And it's that's very true, and it's the feeling you have, and you've got, even with the little, this is just a minor thing, but you feel it even with the Afrikaner men. You'll know them immediately by their little Hitler mustache, and it's true. It's very very obvious, and so you feel that all around you.
Does the whole white population support this?
No, they don't. They don't, and it's the The most troublesome thing right now, though, is your very conservative party, which is instilling fear in white people by their activities. But no, I can't say the whole white population does not feel that way, and so I don't want to leave with a feeling of hopelessness, because there are people who are concerned. But
what's happening right now? This Serafina is, you know, it's at least 4 years old.
Yeah, it is.
It's, mm-hmm. And a lot of this, it seems to be dated. I mean, what's happening
right
now?
No, that's true. But you know, it's still the same situation as far as you don't have as many young people in detention. Although there are times where it comes and goes. They let people out, and they still take more people in, and we don't hear about it. But as far as the education is still in as bad of shape, I think, as it was then. And it's not that's something that happened a while ago, but when we left a year ago, it was still in terrible state. And the young people were not in the school. It still is in that state. And I thought that too, as I look, you know, I thought about the fact that that was a long time ago when that was first produced. And yet it's interesting to see that it's still a part of the situation now. But I think what you said about things in Chicago area and the situation with the schools here, I think, and I always say this, is that our being involved with the people of South Africa does begin here at home. And when we can get our house in order, and when we can be involved with making things good for the minorities here in our country, then we are speaking a message to the world around us. And people do say that. They point their finger and say, well, you know, look at what you think. You're talking out against what we're having going on here in South Africa. But look at your own country, and that, so people do look at that, and when we are an example by what we do in our own country, and how we deal with a situation, the minorities, and education, and housing, and hunger, is also speaking out to the people of the world, and that's very important for us to do. Any other questions or comments?
Do you think the children will ever get together? Cause the collapse of apartheid before they're done?
The children? I think they're probably the ones who will do it more than anybody else. And especially, I find that in the university, at the Wits University, which is in the center of Johannesburg, and also Cape, I think the University of Cape Town, it's the university students who become each other and become involved in the situation. And who are protesting, and the young people, they are the people, I think, who are the ones that are going to do it. If anybody does it, they are going to do it.
It's also important to note that something that took place in Serafina last night that they talked about, when people are detained, the types of coercion and insidious activities that take place by the SADF, the Defense Force, and the South African Police are absolutely incredible when you hear those stories. So there are these, you know, even in the universities where there may be some relationships between whites and blacks and so on, there are people telling on one another, and the detentions take place. And it's hard to know whom to trust.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the whole system, to divide and conquer, and just not being able to trust anyone, whether it's your family member or not, is a way to keep things going. And it is difficult, which you mentioned, when you hear people say, well, look at your own country. It's true, in the United States, we have apartheid too. I mean, it's just it's not legal. Mm-hmm. It's not built into our Constitution. And it's more insidious in that sense. But that does not then disallow us from being active in the global situation, mm-hmm. and trying to somehow affect what happens in Southern Africa.
But we're not going to change. See, it's their revolution. There'll be some things we can do, but they will be the ones that will drive it.
Sure, but that doesn't, that does not take us out of the scene of what's happening. I mean, I happen to be a part of assisting with a scholarship program for what is now 90 Namibians who come to the United States. Some of them came, as Joyce said, were unable to pass their matric. And we have schools in ELCA, colleges and universities, who are willing to take people who have a level of education, which in some cases is the 8th grade, some cases the 10th grade. Not a single, well, I take that back. There may be one person, I have, in the month that I've been gone, there may be one person out of those 80 so far that have gone through school that has had to drop out. But the rest have an energy and a desire for education that is completely different in that sense. That's what I see as different from the United States, in a sense of desire and a need for education in order to change things. So from that perspective, we can
help. We can help, right. But it's their war.
It's not their war. I will not agree with that. Any kind of situation where children are not allowed to learn and to grow any place in the world is not their war. That's our war. We can help.
But I have this feeling that America is cannot be the savior of the entire world.
No, I didn't say that either.
You know, but that we can help.
The one thing, this is an interesting situation, and something I want to use for a sermon illustration someday, but a friend of mine, a couple of students at one of the colleges, Carthage College in Kenosha, Wisconsin, is an Ethiopian and a Namibian talking to a friend of mine, and she was walking barefoot and was complaining because it was hurting her feet, that they were so tender. And they said, well, for heaven's sakes, you know, why are you doing that? She said, because when we grew up, we waited for the summers to be able to take our shoes off and walk barefoot. And they said, what a country. You can have your education, you don't want to be there. You can have your shoes, you don't want to wear them. All we want is education and a pair of shoes.
So good.
So from that perspective, the United States is there.
Tell us more about the weather.
Well, it varies. It becomes very, in Johannesburg, it gets cold. I mean, it gets cold in the June, July, August can get very cold. Out in the rural areas, I'm trying to think about There are cold months and there are very hot months, but
What extreme?
It got down to freezing. I'm trying to think of other parts of the country. Do you know about other parts of Johannesburg? We got freezing. We got snow occasionally. It was a rare occasion.
Uh-huh.
Did we get it when we were there?
No.
No, the people right before we came there, they had snow, but it didn't. It would get up to 80, 90, whatever, sometimes in the summer in Johannesburg. You get down to the coast, then in Natal is very muggy and hot, and it varies across, around different parts of the country.
Yeah, you go into northern,
what
maybe it gets to 103, 110 degrees.
Right.
Like Mexico City, I think where we were was like, but we had the elevation of Denver.
And one of the things that I'm sure not many of you are aware of, we have, I think, done the same thing to the American Indian. You know, we talk about the blacks. The American Indian has got a bum deal from the Department of whatever takes care of Indian affairs. I still remember one of my parishioners getting on her high horse one day, and they were trying to do something for the Indian tribe next to the community, and she said, well, tell them to pull out their bootstraps. And without thinking, one of the other ladies said, how do you tell somebody to do that? I never had a pair of boots.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, we have cloistered them. The education there is not very good. The alcoholism is rampant. It's rampant. It's the understatement. You go to any Indian reservation, and the Alcoholics Anonymous could be meeting 7 days a week and 7 noons and 7 mornings, and we have not allowed them to work, and so we keep repeating this cycle of live on the reservation and we'll
not allow you to live like you're supposed to live here and live according to some Norwegian who comes out of Minneapolis who's never been on an Indian reservation. And that's okay. That's okay because they work for the government. But you have to understand the culture. And that's the problem, is we don't take time when we deal with the blacks or the Indians or even the Mexicans to understand their culture. Mm-hmm. How they think, how they live, what they like to eat. Now, I know that sounds strange, but I got a very valid lesson in that. I just got done running a food bank, and we served meals at that food bank. And one day, the gal who was cooking says, I'm going to make some black-eyed peas, and I kind of looked back, and she said, well, you white folks don't know what's good. And I looked there and I said, what do you mean with that? She's just what I said. She said, you ought to see the expression on your face when I said I was going to fix black-eyed peas for lunch. She said, before you get all out of shape, she says, try it. You might like it. But that's something I never think about worrying about.
Yeah.
And that's part of their staple diet.
I guess we all need to be educated. But I think what I'd like to close with, and maybe we can sing the song once more and get a feel for it. A quote that Malepi Tsele said about people's education, because a new slogan has emerged, forward to people's education, to a people's education. He said, people's education should involve the whole community in its structure, parents and students included, not only professionals. It must include as its contents the life experience of the community, an aim to address burning needs, and it must incorporate methods that reflect the dialogue presupposed between students and teachers. It must aim at transformation of the status quo. And one other thing I think is important to think about. In education, many of the main actors, pupils and teachers, have seen the learning environment collapse around them and the education system disintegrate in South Africa. And the hurts are deep, and the emotions run high, and the obstacles to understanding and shared debate are massive. But there is also hope, because in spite of the slogans and the rejection of much of what at present is schooling, there is a common appreciation of the fundamental importance of education and what it could contribute to a regenerated society. So I think that's what needs to happen.
I think that's one of the bright things that's happening in the mission field, is we're beginning to learn and not reject their pagan beliefs, that they don't conflict too much there, and we're working with it, and we're making headway now because of that. Because many of their beliefs are sound beliefs, and we shouldn't destroy it from them, but we have built from that. And I think we're making that.
And I think in that land, what I think about most is it's such a beautiful land, a beautiful country with beautiful people, and the variety. That was what the most special thing for me was, the whole variety of peoples. And there's so much to offer to the people in that land and to the people of the world. But the education of these young people that are coming up is so vital now, because they are the future. And they are missing so much, and yet they have so much to offer. And so they need our prayers and our support, our real strong support, so that it can become the important and special place that it is, and that it can offer the world so much with all the peoples. But it does rest on the education, and that's an important issue. And if there's nothing else, do you feel like singing once more? And if you don't,
yep,
come on, let's do it.
Okay. I'll play it this time too, and we'll